seriously popular.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In today's episode,
have Liverpool been mentally torpedoed by United?
Why Postecoglou is right to ignore talk of fourth.
And banning away fans for the Old Firm is shameful.
I'm Ian Ladyman.
I'm Chris Sutton.
And it's all kicking off.
Hello and welcome to It's All Kicking Off. Chris is here, looking at me through his laptop screen. Down on sleep, but hopefully high on adrenaline. Like a Rangers fan after a last-minute equaliser at Ibrox. We will get to the Old Firm derby soon. It was the best ever, according to Sky. Chris was there and may have a view on all that. He played in a few. First, though, to the title race in England. And Liverpool have done it again. And by that, I mean made an absolute mess of things at Old Trafford. So let me kick off with a bold statement, Chris. I think this may be the worst Manchester United side since Sir Alex Ferguson retired 11 years ago. They are absolutely hopeless, and yet Liverpool cannot beat them this season.
Yeah, it's a big opportunity missed. I think from Jurgen Klopp's perspective and the Liverpool perspective, they've basically murdered Manchester United on three occasions, but just not been able to take their opportunities, and they have been wasteful, and they may look at these the league games, of course, at the end of the season, and they were the ones which got away and cost Liverpool the title. I know that there are Liverpool supporters out there who think, on the face of things, a point at Old Trafford could end up being a good point, but not with the way the game panned out, not with the chances Liverpool missed. I mean, they were totally, totally dominant.
15 shots to nil at half-time. Bruno Fernandes' equaliser from about 45 yards was United's first shot of the game. I'm not sure if I've ever seen anything like that.
Manchester United's XG. I know you love all the XG at half time. Go on, have a guess. Do you know this?
Is it possible to have minus XG?
not far off. Do you know this, though?
Do you know? I don't know.
Well, the XG was zero. Zero.
Yeah,
well,
it's got to be. It's got to be if you're not having a shot. Now, talking of shots, over the three games that Liverpool have played against Manchester United this season, one of course in the FA Cup, Liverpool have had 87 shots. 87 shots in three games, haven't won any of them. Two draws, one FA Cup defeat. Is this going to be Manchester United's final revenge for what happened in 1992? For those who don't remember or can't remember that far back, Manchester United went to Anfield at the back end of the 1992 season, going toe-to-toe with Leeds for the old First Division Championship. Liverpool beat them. Leeds won the league. You lost the league on Merseyside, is what they sing to Manchester United to this day. That was when the Always Look on the Bright Side of Life song also burst from the cop for the first time. Have Manchester United now got their revenge for that?
Is this a northern thing, these sort of long-held grudges? I mean, that's a long grudge, isn't it?
Well, all the best grudges are held for a long time, aren't they? Unless they're not really grudges, are they? You can't be a grudge if it only lasts a day and a half.
No, yeah,
those things are remembered. Of course they are, yes.
Last night on the football phone in which I do, we had Manchester United fans who had taken great delight in the fact that they have possibly stopped Liverpool winning the Premier League. That's their sort of main focus of what they can take out of this season. That's quite sad, isn't it? They've been that poor that they have to, you know, resort to being jubilant about stopping Liverpool, who have, you know, been pretty excellent this season, winning the Premier League. If that's the case, what they can take out of this season. That's ridiculous.
It is quite sad, but it's also really, really important to them. Really important. And I absolutely understand that. If the shoe was
you're petty?
If the shoe was on the other foot, it would be exactly the same. It's really, really important. Let's just get one thing out of the way.
I'm going to disagree with you there. Okay. It's about the bigger picture. It's about, you know, we see a lot of managers who just talk about focusing on themselves and their team. And when you start having to, you know, to look at other teams and their results, that's where, you know,
There's no such thing as a bigger picture when it comes to Manchester United and Liverpool. Okay, you need to understand that there's no such thing as a bigger picture. If Liverpool recover from this, let's face it, I wrote in the Daily Mail's print pullout match day this morning that Mo Salah penalty to equalise essentially turned disaster into mere disappointment. And I think that's about right. You know, it wasn't a disaster in the end for Liverpool. They got something from the game. But if they go on to recover and win the title, they'll never talk of this day again. But if they don't, and if they don't win the title, this will make all the difference to Manchester United fans. They will go into the summer smiling, despite the fact they've got one of the worst teams that I can remember to wear that Manchester United shirt, despite the fact that the football club is a bit of a mess, despite the fact that the manager will be on his way in the summer. They will be smiling going into the off-season. It will make a world of difference. Now, just let me say something. Let me get something out of the way before we go on and talk a bit more about the game. There will be people out there, and there are people out there already, talking about a big day for Erik ten Hag and how Manchester United showed spirit in the second half and how this shows that there's still something left in that team and that maybe he is the man to take them forward. It's delusional rubbish. It's delusional rubbish. They were dreadful yesterday. Manchester United are even more so look like a team who, apart from carrying the threat on the counter, don't really know how to play football. The easiest way to play against them, as you and I have said before, is to let them have the ball in their own half, because ultimately, eventually, they will give it back to you. There's no method, there's no plan, and they were lucky. They got a bit of adrenaline going after the first goal. Kobbie Mainoo scored an absolutely wonderful second goal, which can happen, and then the game went back to how it had been before with Liverpool pressing. They're awful, United. And that game yesterday, Jim Ratcliffe was there, the new minority shareholder at Manchester United. He was there. Dave Brailsford was there. What they saw will not encourage them to think that there is something to work with Erik ten Hag and that team. They're not stupid. They're not football experts, but they are sporting people. And they know what a capable sporting outfit is supposed to look like, and that isn't it. I actually think yesterday works against ten Hag. Forget the result. Just watching them play shows you everything that you need to know. Sorry that sounded like a little bit of a rant.
No, that's all right. I mean, I'm going to do what you do a lot on this podcast and say, so you're coming round to agreeing with what I said months ago.
About Ten Hag?
It's not, yeah. Mm. Erik 10 games. Okay,
I think I probably have,
Erik,
yeah.
I was a little bit out. Erik 10 months would have been... Maybe closer.
I have come around to that. I started the season saying on this podcast that Ten Hag was the best thing that United had going for them, and I was wrong.
You know, I base that basically what you're catching up with now on performances. You know, essentially, results of course are important, but you can't kid people. You can't paper over the cracks this season. They haven't controlled games like they should be controlling games. And it's all about, although you don't like me saying it, it is all about the bigger picture. It is all about looking at teams and styles who are ahead of you and trying to get to that level, the level of Manchester City, even the identity you see at clubs like Tottenham, you look at Arsenal, they are miles ahead of Manchester United. So I think you've eventually come round to agreeing with me.
Now, when we spoke, I think we are about to disagree again now. When we spoke last week, looking ahead to this game, and in fact, I'm doing it again. I said it straight after the FA Cup 4-3 Manchester United win, which was, as we all know, extraordinary game. I said straight away that that could have a psychological impact on what happened in the league game, which was 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks away, came around yesterday. I sat there watching that game. I watched an almost identical game of football. And there was a point early in the second half when Liverpool missed yet another opportunity to turn a one-goal lead into a decisive two-goal lead. And thought to myself, Liverpool have a pathological, psychological problem with this game. What happened 3 weeks ago is in their heads and it's killing them. Again, it was the same problems, weak, indecisive shots, poor final pass selection, inability to turn numerical overloads into chances and then getting done on the break. It was exactly the same, mate. It was in their heads. It was clear.
The only person with a psychological problem is you. I don't know what you're talking about. Honestly, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going to tell you why. Because we started the podcast talking about Liverpool's dominance in these games. Was it 62 shots yesterday? I may be right. Maybe
it wasn't 62 shots. It was about 28.
Well, however
shots.
Many it were. You know, they have slaughtered Manchester United. They have done. Do you think, in a sporting sense, that Mo Salah, you know, the chance he missed, Luis Diaz, they're thinking in that moment when that opportunity arises about Manchester United and the sort of, you know, in your words, the psychological effect of playing against Manchester United? No, they're not thinking about that. They're thinking about no, absolutely, that's absolute rubbish, Ian.
They're thinking about
converting an opportunity, thinking about their technique. You're not thinking about who you're playing.
If you play
in that moment,
if you play golf, as you and I both do, not particularly well. But even if you're a pro,
that wouldn't be a good watch.
If you're a professional golfer and you play 18 holes well, tee to green, and you cannot putt and you miss short putts, and you go out and play again the next day, that problem's still with you, and you need to work it out and work it through your system. That's what got to Liverpool yesterday. It was still in
that's
the system.
Rubbish.
What happened 3 weeks ago was still in their system. Now,
So golf, totally different sport, individual sport, but I don't know whether that's the difference. You know, it is an individual thing, but you can't tell me that Mo Salah in that moment thinks about Manchester United when the chances come along. If you questioned Mo Salah on that, if you actually sat down and interviewed him and all the Liverpool players to you know, with the same point about it being psychological, they'd tell you that that's utter rubbish.
Well, they're not going to admit it to me, are they? Not going to admit it. But it's about, you know this, Chris, taking chances, scoring goals requires calmness and it requires precision and it requires ice in your veins. And Liverpool had none of that yesterday, and they had none of
but
it.
I never thought about that as a player, any particular team. It's about your technique.
Well, all I say,
in
mate,
a particular moment, it's say, not about the opposition.
Yeah, and technique is affected by your psychological state of mind. Let's move on. We're not going to agree. One thing we might agree on is the brilliance of the Kobbie Mainoo goal. Superb goal by the young Manchester United midfielder. He was first at Old Trafford. Great moment for him. And I just want to mention one thing to you that I've been wanting to mention to you for a couple of weeks, because we know that Mainoo made his England debut in the recent doubleheader against Brazil and Belgium at Wembley and played very, very well, particularly in that Belgium game that I was at. There is an obvious clamour now for Mainoo to start in the Euros when England go to Germany in the summer. And I just want to read something to you that Gareth Southgate said in the interview area after the Belgian game when asked about Mainoo. This is Gareth Southgate. There is that fearlessness to come in and the technical ability to receive the ball, to find a pass and manipulate the ball in tight areas. All good and well. But then he said this, we are obviously a little bit more open with him in the team. And that tells me that he's not playing. That tells me that Gareth is going to flip back to that innate and almost instinctive desire to have security in the middle of his team.
I can't say I disagree with anything you say. I think that's a weakness.
Of weakness in?
For Gareth. In Gareth. Yeah. I do. And look, I think I talked about Harry Maguire, surprised that he went to the last World Cup. Remember when he wasn't getting game time at Manchester United. Gareth isn't one who likes to gamble and throw the dice, is he? And I don't even think it is a risk. I always think that I understand the loyalty aspect, but you know there comes a time when you know if England want to you know get over that final hurdle and win a tournament, why wouldn't you play a player who's at the absolute peak of the game? And you know when we're actually looking at that midfield area now. Calvin Phillips has gone from that. I think you'd agree with that. I mean, albeit yep. Gareth stuck with him for a while. He's played his way out of contention. But who are the other players really in competition? And you'd say Jordan Henderson, wouldn't you?
Well, and Jordan's in the squad. He was in the last squad. And while, as you mentioned, Jordan, his time in Saudi Arabia went badly. His time at Ajax is going disastrously badly. He didn't play yesterday. Over the weekend, he was injured. Ajax lost 6-0 to Feyenoord over the weekend. The biggest ever defeat in the Dutch league. They are 33 points behind leaders PSV. They are sixth. And in that game against Feyenoord, they had one shot to Feyenoord's 30. So we think Manchester United are in disarray. Erik ten Hag's old team are even worse. And Henderson is wrapped up in all that. So... I don't. You wouldn't
maybe
say.
Maybe they'll get Eric back.
You wouldn't say. You know what? You may have hit on something there, despite the fact it was supposed to be a joke. Jordan probably is in contention. Well, he is in contention to play for England because he's in the squad. He's in the squad. And if Gareth wants to have a more conventional holding player to sit with Declan Rice, then it may well be, he will come back into the frame. Anyway. Just a thought. Kobbie Mainoo, a shining light for Manchester United yesterday, as was Andre Onana, by the way, in goal. He is one Manchester United player who has proved himself fit to wear that shirt this season after that dreadful start that he had to his Manchester United career. And I think it's only right that we recognise that. Now, psychologically,
is this your word of the day?
At least I can say it. From here until the end of the season, it will be about psychological strength as much as it will be about football. That would have been a boost for Liverpool to win that yesterday. They didn't do it. But what about Arsenal? Arsenal must be feeling almost unbeatable. I was going to say invincible.
Psychologically,
I was going to talk about. I was going to describe them as invincible, but we've had that tag attached to another famous Arsenal team, so we won't attach it to this one. But they are flying at the moment. 3-0 win at Brighton on Saturday evening. Arsenal statistics are extraordinary. They have conceded 3 goals in 10 games in all competitions. 4-29 against 3. They haven't conceded a single goal away in the league since January the 30th. 4-20 against 0 in that spell. That is some form to be taking into the last 6 or 7 games of the campaign.
Some form, some standards that Arsenal have had all season.
Well, not all season. And that's the point, Chris. Not all season.
Well,
not
it
all
has
season.
Been all season. Oh, I mean, blimey, you're being picky, aren't you?
Just telling the truth.
I mean, you know, look where they are. Look how many goals they've scored. Look how many goals that they have conceded. And to go to Brighton, and Brighton, I think De Zerbi wants out, and they aren't where they were last season. But having said that, that is a tricky fixture on the face of it. So to go to Brighton. I know he rested players up against Luton, played his reserves against Luton, dispatched Luton with ease. And then to go there and win with so much authority. I mean, I just wonder in seasons to come whether we will talk about this partnership of Gabriel and Saliba as one of the great centre-back pairings in the Premier League. Have I gone early with that? I don't know, because, you know, essentially, do they have to win a league for us to sit there and marvel about just how good they are? I don't necessarily think that they have to, but they have been instrumental, really, in getting Arsenal to this point, and it's about seeing it through. But defensively, well, they're a really well balanced team. Arteta's proven, as we talked about the other week with the setup against Manchester City, that he is so adaptable as a manager, and you just can't see them slipping up. I look at that the game against Tottenham, that North London derby, as being one where if they can overcome that, because you can imagine. I mean, you've talked about Liverpool, Manchester United. You can imagine Spurs fans absolutely desperate to stop Arsenal winning the title.
And Arsenal have also got to go to Manchester United as well. But I thought a post match
they'll win that.
A post match quote from Jurgen Klopp yesterday was very apposite. He simply said, "If United play like this against Arsenal, they will lose." And he's right. Going back to what you're saying about Gabriel and Saliba. This is not the type of thing that I normally like, but I have to say on this occasion, I thought it was purely instinctive and it said everything about the spirit that runs through that Arsenal team at the moment. I think it was Gabriel who blocked a late shot. Arsenal were already winning 3-0 at this point, but he blocked a late shot just to ensure that they kept another clean sheet. And the celebrations from David Raya in goal and Saliba and Gabriel and other players who came running in, I thought, it wasn't performative, it wasn't for the cameras, it was genuine, and it showed a desire to do everything right. And at this stage of the season, you can't buy that. If you're Mikel Arteta, you can't buy that, can you?
No, I don't know where I am on defenders celebrating blocking shots. I know. Celebration place attacking me. I was at Chelsea the other night when, I'm not joking, De Sassi, every time he blocked a shot or made a tackle, he was fist pumping. Come on, this can't be a thing.
I agree, which is catching on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And quickly, by the way, I don't want to get deep down in this one.
Are we being miserable there?
No, but I've just said that there is a time and a place, and I think with 2 minutes to go in a game, when you make a tackle, when you're knackered, you know what it feels like. I don't. When you're knackered and you throw yourself into one last effort to just try and do something, which fundamentally people may say doesn't matter that much. What's the difference between 3-0 and 3-1? To them, it was everything. And I think on that occasion, I could see the merit in it. I'm absolutely with you. I've nothing at all. There's nothing at all to like about a player making a tackle 10 minutes into the game and then standing up and punch in the air just for doing his bit.
I shouldn't be critical because I beat my daughter. No, I drew with my daughter at badminton last week, 12-year-old daughter Sophia, and I did a drop shot at one point when we had a good rally, good exchange. I did a drop shot and had a little fist pump myself there, so I shouldn't be.
One of the best things I did recently was to start following your wife Sam on Instagram, because she posts all your.
Did she accept you?
I think she's made the mistake of having an open account, so I'm in there now. She'll never get rid of me, just as you will never be rid of me. And on there, she occasionally posts videos of your middle-aged sporting endeavours. And there are a couple of badminton clips on there, and I have to say, your forearm smash. Is there something wrong with your shoulder? Why can't you just... You smash the badminton like you're kind of bowling a cricket ball. It's like a windmill. It's most odd.
That's a Norfolk style.
Norfolk windmill.
If you go around the world, people have different styles. That's part of the Norfolk style.
The Norfolk windmill. You are the Mick Shannon of Norwich. That's what you are. Anyway, before we move out of this Arsenal section, that penalty, Tariq Lamptey on Gabriel Jesus, he got the ball. And that is one of the kind of modern twists on on the laws of the game, one of the many modern twists on laws of the game that I don't like, which is that he takes the ball, admittedly just a nick on the ball, and then follows through and takes the player, and it's a penalty. But how are you supposed to tackle without following through, Chris? It's impossible, isn't it?
Yep. I think Ian Wright pretty much summed up where we are with the award of penalties on Match of the Day. Nobody knows anymore. I'm with you. If you take something of the ball, then whether you take the opposition player out or whatever, it is your momentum following through. So, look, am I going to have a big moan about it? No, but I thought that Brighton would feel slightly hard done by.
Because it certainly wasn't dangerous. I also think that Brighton might have felt slightly hard done by the way that Ben White went down as though struck by a falling tree later in the game.
It's terrible, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe we shouldn't linger on that. We talked a lot about Ben White recently. We don't need to do so again. Now, City, doing what City do, scoring goals, winning games at this stage of the season, they won comfortably at Palace. Jack Grealish had a part in all four City goals, which I was really pleased about. They weren't all direct assists, but he was involved in all four goals.
You wrote him off a while ago. It's good to see you backing him now.
Had a terrific performance. I was just a bit disappointed that his manager didn't come onto the field afterwards and give him a big lecture about how brilliant he'd been in front of everybody. Where was Pep when we needed him?
Do you owe Pep an apology? I don't know whether Pep listens to us all kicking off. Do you owe him an apology? Because maybe it was those words, that bit of coaching on the pitch at the end of the last game, which inspired Jack to perform the way he did against Crystal Palace.
Can you imagine Pep driving into training on a Monday morning, listening to it all kicking off in his car, thinking, "Oh, I can't get to work until I've got Chris Sutton's take on the Wolves West Ham controversy." Maybe.
Does he not cycle to work?
Jan Agafyortov came up to me in the press box at Old Trafford yesterday and told me how much he likes our podcast. So we do have some.
Good player, Jan, from my era.
Yeah, some celebrity listeners. Anyway, back to Pep and Jack. Do I owe Pep an apology? No. I don't like that habit of Pep coming onto pitch and berating his players and chatting up other teams' players.
How do you know he berated? That's fake news.
Well, did he clock the expression on Jack Grealish's face after he walked off?
He might have been disappointed with himself.
Stop it. Anyway, Jack Grealish stopped to speak to newspaper reporters after the win at Selhurst Park at the weekend and gave a very open interview in which he admitted that he'd been watching the latest Netflix Fly on the Wall documentary about City from last season to try and give himself a bit of inspiration during what's been a difficult campaign for him. Told our City reporter Jack Gorn and others that he'd actually teared up watching a bit of it, watching some of those memories of the treble season. And this is what he said to reporters. At times this season I've struggled a little bit with myself. Sometimes you do sit there and think, how can you ever top what happened last year? Will any happiness ever come close to that? But in myself, I feel like I'm coming back now. You need that hunger. The manager has been so good with me. I owe him a little bit. He's been there for me. A great guy with a really good heart. The best manager to ever exist. I want to repay him now. So it would appear that whatever Pep Guardiola has been doing with Jack Grealish, it's been working.
And it's good Jack has come out and spoken so honestly. And it's about, as a player, it's about finding a way. You know, you have peaks and troughs, throughout your career, throughout certain seasons. And, winning the Champions League clearly was a high that season. His performances. And this season, I think it's fair to say, I mean, all joking aside, you I think you called him out earlier on in the season for his performances or lack of performance, and that's an acceptance, actually, what Jack has said to Jack Gorn in that piece, that he wasn't quite at the level. So it's such a high level, and you can't be a little bit off, because they have such a strong squad, a good squad, players who can just come in and fill your position. So competition for places, it pushes players on. But I actually think it's refreshing to see him come out and be honest and sort of, however he's done it, find a way of getting back to the level which we know he can play at.
Yeah, he's an honest lad, Jack Grealish. You can say whatever you think about his football or his progress at City, whatever. He's a very, very honest lad. And actually, to be fair, what I did say about him at the start of the season was that he'd lost that He seemed to have lost that ability to, or that desire, or that instinct to get the ball and go forward and move past a man. There was a lot of kind of checking back.
But we don't know whether that was that was instruction as well.
I think Doku's
totally different, isn't he?
I think we both accepted that there probably was a bit of Guardiola instruction behind that. We Guardiola does like to play structured football. From that point of view, and I think there was a bit of that. But what I did spot in Jack Grealish on Saturday when I watched the highlights of the game against Palace was that desire, first movement, go past a man, get defenders on the back foot, and City were all the better for it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Now, City and Arsenal are both in Champions League action this week. A huge week of European football. They both play on the same night. They both play tomorrow night. They both play Tuesday night. City are in Madrid. I'm travelling there later today to watch that one. Arsenal at home to Bayern Munich. Bayern have just lost again to Heidenheim at the weekend and are now 16 points behind Bayer Leverkusen. Exactly. Are now 16 points behind...
Are you sure you don't mean Hoffenheim?
I'm pretty sure I've got that name right. I know Hoffenheim when I see it. And they are now 16 points behind Bayer Leverkusen in the Bundesliga. So they head to...
That's over.
That is over. So they head to the Emirates in poor shape. One thing, somebody made a point to me last night. I missed it. It was a Liverpool fan, I think, looking for signs of hope. Somebody made a point to me yesterday that City and Arsenal, if they were to negotiate their quarterfinals, will meet in the Champions League semi-final. There will be two absolutely enormous games, and I suppose there's a chance that that could possibly play into Liverpool's hands in terms of the Premier League, but we're not at that point yet.
You were right. I've just Googled Heidenheim. Yeah. I've never heard of it.
You really put me on the back foot then when you said that, because I even though this podcast isn't live and we could have edited it out, I don't think our producer would have done so.
Why have you heard of them? I mean, they're a bit like Accrington Stanley, aren't they?
I hadn't heard of them. I'm just glad that I haven't made a huge error. Yeah, Bayern were ahead in the game. Bayern were ahead in the game, and Heidenheim came back to beat them. It has been a disastrous campaign for Bayern, and I think the only way that it can be rescued for Bayern and the England captain Harry Kane would be if they were to win the Champions League. And I think they've got next to no chance of doing that. By the way, I think Arsenal will knock them out. Now, the battle for fourth place in the Premier League has taken a bit of a turn. Villa somehow failed to beat Brentford at the weekend, drew 3-3 at home. Whereas Ange Postecoglou's Tottenham beat Nottingham Forest in North London. They now have the edge. They are in fourth place. Ange is still persisting with this peculiar narrative of not caring about results. His latest quote, "I couldn't care less about the race for fourth, mate. What I care about is the way the team progresses." Why does he keep saying this? This is fooling nobody apart from you.
What's Ange Postecoglou's job?
To win football matches.
And how does he do that? By coaching the team. That's his primary focus. I've said this to you before and you clearly don't listen. It's all about performance. You said earlier on this pod about Erik ten Hag he's not going to be at Manchester United next season. What's their league position? What are they in? Sixth?
Sixth, yeah, somehow.
Manchester United, sixth place. So is that, on the face of things, is that a disaster? Manchester United's league position, sixth place. For them, they've regressed since last season. But is that a sackable offence? Why are you saying that Erik ten Hag should be sacked at the end of the season, or they should part ways? Why are you saying because that? Because the performance levels haven't been there.
Six isn't good enough for Manchester United.
So, right, okay, but you're being pernickety.
No,
there.
I'm not.
So, yes, you are.
Just telling the truth.
Stop butting in. Right, so Ange Postecoglou, the way that he's coached throughout his coaching career, is all about performance levels. If the performance is there, the results will come, hence the league position, the importance of that. What part of that do you not understand? If that is his process and what works for him, then what part of that do you not understand?
I understand.
I don't know.
I understand all of that, but you can't pretend that league position doesn't matter. Tottenham have got a huge opportunity ahead of them this summer.
But it's how you get there.
If they can finish, stop interrupting me. If they can finish,
you're a hypocrite.
If they can finish,
you've changed your view between United and Tottenham.
No,
you can't. You can't. No, yes, you have. That's called hypocrisy.
No, it's not true. It's not true. Ten Hag deserves to be sacked on league position and performance. Postecoglou has done a brilliant job at Tottenham, but opportunity knocks for them this season, this summer. If they were to get into the top four, the financial opportunities that await in the Champions League, an expanded Champions League for next season, in which there'll be more group games for every team that qualifies, more money, more gate receipts, more commercial opportunities, more TV income, that then immediately translates to the ability to for Ange Postecoglou to strengthen his team in the summer. What he's got there is the nucleus of a really, really good Tottenham team. And you've got your head in your hands, I don't know why. If he can add 2, 3, 4 more top quality players to that in the summer, they've got a real chance. And not qualifying for the Champions League will impact that. It's common sense, Chris. It's common financial sense. I'm not saying that Postecoglou should look, if they were to finish fifth, should look at it as a bad season. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that he can't pretend that fourth place doesn't matter. It really matters. It really, really matters.
But he's not saying that.
I couldn't care less about the race
for
fourth.
But what is his primary focus? It's on performance. It then works hand in hand, Ian. I don't know what part of that you don't. I don't.
I couldn't care less about the race for fourth. Daniel Levy will have that.
His job is to coach the team. Performances are good. That's just going to come anyway.
Daniel Levy.
I don't understand that.
So
You want Ten Hag out.
I can imagine.
It's, you know, your argument with United is completely different.
I can imagine a conversation between Ange Postecoglou.
It's like league position.
I can imagine a conversation between Ange Postecoglou and Daniel Levy at the end of the season when Tottenham have finished fifth, when Ange walks into his office and sits down and Daniel says, well, can you just explain to me why we tossed away the chance to get into the Champions League? And Ange Postecoglou says, oh, yeah, but the performances were okay, mate. Anyway, that's where I stand on it.
I think fifth place will get a Champions League spot anyway.
Different argument.
There you go.
But Ange won't care.
Well,
Ange won't care. Doesn't care less about the race for the Champions League. Right, Wolves versus West Ham. I think we are going to agree on that. I think we are going to agree on this, actually, this one.
You're like my wife, Sam. You always have the last word.
Well, to be fair, I do.
You mutter awfully.
I do stand.
And then you move on.
I do stand at an advantage in that I kind of am the host of this podcast. So I do have the opportunity to just shut you up and move on, which is what we are going to do now. And we're going to talk about events at Molineux, where West Ham beat Wolves 2-1. But what was interesting about that game particularly was a disallowed Wolves equaliser for Max Kilman in added time. It was disallowed because the Wolves player, Tawanda Torreira, if I've pronounced that right, which I probably haven't, was standing in front of the West Ham goalkeeper, Lucas Fabianski. He was in an offside position. The goal was ruled out and the world appears to have lost its shit about it. And I don't really understand. As far as I'm concerned, he was standing in front of the goalkeeper. He was offside. Disallow the goal.
I'm with you on this. I think we are in a minority.
Yeah.
With the way that we both think on this. And then Gary O'Neill, some of his language. Possibly the worst decision I have ever seen. Only if your knowledge and understanding of the game is really poor, you could reach the conclusion it's offside. Imagine if you flip that, had it been the other way round, I'm sure Gary O'Neill would be coming out and saying that that his goalkeeper his goalkeeper's vision was impeded by a West Ham attacker. So, you know, I understand that there was frustration at the end. And I think Gary O'Neill also came out and said David Moyes thought it was harsh, and Fabianski. To my knowledge, David Moyes said it was the correct decision. And I just, the referee, okay, goes to the monitor and to the letter of the law makes the right decision. Okay, so how can we criticise him for that? If he doesn't make that decision, then he'll probably be called out and demoted for next week. So I don't, you know, I really think that, you know, Gary O'Neill has got this wrong. And then on Match of the Day, you know, everybody loves Gary Lineker. He was talking about an appeal situation. I don't actually understand where that would take it if teams had an appeal. It would just be another add-on to complicate already a sort of struggle with where we're at this moment in time.
Gary Lineker suggested that teams should be able to appeal against a decision that they don't like. For example, like tennis players can appeal against balls that have been called out, for example.
It would have still been the same conclusion, right?
That would just slow
the game down.
And none of us really would ever get home before midnight if we went down that path. That's not going to happen. Not one of Gary's best ideas, that one. The Wolves chairman, Jeff Shee, added his own voice to the cacophony yesterday, essentially saying that VAR is bad for the game. All I will say is this. When you watch that instant back, and Shearer's standing in front of the goalkeeper, what is he? That's obviously a training ground move. He's put there by the manager. What is he doing there? Is he there to get the ball? No.
Yeah.
Is he there to impact what's happening around the ball? No. He's in there with a direct instruction to get in the way of the goalkeeper and obstruct the goalkeeper. That's what he's doing. So if he's doing that, and he ends up doing that whilst in an offside position, then it's a foul. From my point of view,
that's not in every case. Just mitigating of players who stand on the goalkeeper. There are players who stand on the goalkeeper. I played with a great one, Henrik Larsson, who used to move out towards the 6-yard line and head most corners in. So you know there are ones who do that. But I take your wider point about most players are told, if not one, there'll be two or three, to just impede the goalkeeper, block the goalkeeper. That's their role in that situation.
Exactly. And as far as I'm concerned, in the modern game, there is far too much that goes on in the penalty area whilst awaiting corners and free kicks that is not connected to where the ball's coming these days. And now a lot of that, we talked about it before, Arsenal were given great praise early in the season for some of their set pieces, the way they block players, they block runners, etc. As far as I'm concerned, if you're not trying to get to the ball, what are you doing? So I think we are both on the
same. So there has to be a law change. Just moving this on. there has to be a change of the law then, doesn't it? About, you know, players in goalkeepers' eye line impeding the goalkeeper's vision. That has to change. So that's where I think that Gary O'Neill is wrong. Because just imagine, you know, if his team concede a goal next season, somebody shoots from the edge of the box and there's somebody standing in front of his goalkeeper, it's the same, who's in an offside position, it's the same principle.
And was it Brian, isn't it? Was it Brian Clough who once said, if you're in the penalty area and not interfering with play, then what on earth are you doing there? And I think that's a pretty decent way of putting it. Now, you were in Scotland yesterday for the Old Firm derby, Rangers 3 Celtic 3. On the Sky website last night, it raised the question, the possibility of it being the best Old Firm game ever.
Oh,
and you were co-commentary for Sky. You had the best view of all.
That's a big call. I mean, personally, my favourite one was a demolition derby 6-2. that was a real memorable one. That was my first game against Rangers. It was brilliant. It was a great advert for the Scottish game. It was a great result for the neutral. Are there many neutrals in Scotland? Well, of course, there's a few, you know, a fair few. But, you know, the fact of the matter is a draw keeps it bubbling along because it's in both teams' hands still. Rangers have to go to Celtic one more time. We'll find out the fixtures after the split. And, of course, no Rangers fans will be allowed into Celtic Park next season. There is going to be fans allowed back in the away fans allowed back in this fixture, which, I mean, that is one thing which I think you said to me before we came on was really noticeable yesterday, and it's good this situation is being resolved. A few years ago now, Rangers didn't allow Celtic fans into the stadium, away fans into the stadium. And this is sort of rumbled on anyway. That's all going to be concluded now. But yeah, onto the pitch. Thoroughly enjoyed the game. Celtic dominated the first half and should have been out of sight, really. But Rangers adjusted at half time. Philip Clement made a substitution, brought a guy on loan from Brighton on, Abdullah Seema, who made a huge difference to Rangers. Rangers dominated the second half. Eventually, get themselves back in it 2-1. I thought a dubious penalty, 2-2. And then, I mean, the stadium was absolute bedlam. And then Celtic go down the other end. Adam Eder scores a brilliant goal. And I've got to say, the Rangers equaliser into added time was an absolutely stunning goal from Matondo. Brilliant, brilliant finish. And the roof nearly came off the stadium. But it's finally poised. Now, Rangers go to Dundee on Wednesday. They're a point behind. But this is going to go to the wire. And that game, that Celtic and Rangers may drop points in other games, but that game looks like it's going to be pivotal. So, it's all to play for.
Now, there's a few things that I want to say. You mentioned there the Matondo equaliser, which actually I think was even better than Corby Maynard's goal for Manchester United. Even better. An absolutely wonderful strike. What a way to finish a game. Now, just going back to what you talked about, there being no away fans, I have to say, if it was, as far as I'm concerned, if you as a football club, whether it be in Scotland or England, refuse to make seats available or capacity available for visiting supporters, you should forfeit the game, as far as I'm concerned. Unless there's a security reason, unless you're taking advice from the police or the authorities not to have away fans. If you refuse to accommodate away supporters in a professional football game, you should forfeit the game. As far as I'm concerned, there's no excuse for it. I don't care who started it or whose fault it is. It shouldn't happen. It absolutely shouldn't happen. And I'm glad it's going to be resolved for next season. Now, I want to ask you a question. When I was watching the highlights last night, and it's so weird. It's so weird watching on television and Celtic score a goal and you can absolutely hear a pin drop. It's so strange to listen and to watch. But when Adam Eder scored what looked like was going to be the winning goal for Celtic, I did hear a lone voice. It was a cheer. It was an exclamation of joy. Was it you? Was it
I
you?
Think it was
off,
Kenny Miller.
Was it
I think,
you
I think
off
that was
mic?
Kenny Miller.
Was it?
I tell you what it was. It was it was
you know
the
what I'm talking
because
about.
Of the because yeah no I do. It was the bedlam. It was incredible.
It was
that,
you, wasn't
that,
it?
I don't know how many seconds there was before
it was
or
you.
How long it was after it was. Yeah, it was. It was me. But I don't know how, because it was bedlam. Honestly, it was so exciting, so tense, and then all of a sudden, you know, Celtic the. Two up, it goes to 2-2. Rangers get themselves level. I mean, it was in the moment.
If it was Kenny Miller, I don't think he'd ever be allowed.
I can get excited.
I don't think
can we get excited and wrapped up in football?
Not blaming you, mate. Not blaming you. I just listened to it last night and thought, blimey, is that my friend I can hear in the background there? Is that my friend?
Has he got excited?
Imagine if Kenny Miller would never be allowed back to Ibox again if it'd been him. Anyway, look, I would advise anyone to go onto Sky website and watch the highlights of the game if you didn't see it, because it was extraordinary. And listen,
I might do this on this pod. I might be excited on this pod sometime.
Just,
and
we can
scream.
We can all hope. Have a listen out for my co-host a minute or two from time. at Ibrox yesterday. Right, one thing I should have mentioned earlier, by the way, in the Tottenham section was that Joe Kinnear passed away yesterday at the age of 77. Very well known, obviously, for his time as manager of Wimbledon and at Luton and at Newcastle, but also a very, very fine player, decorated player when he played for Tottenham. And I just wanted to read one thing out. So Joe was a youngster when he won the FA Cup with Tottenham in 1967. He was only just broken into the first team when they beat Chelsea at Wembley. He was 19, the youngest player on the field. And he was voted man of the match by many newspapers. And I just want to read this out here. Joking his bonuses for winning the cup came to £2,500. He gave £500 straight away to his mother. He gave his four sisters £30 each and bought them each a new outfit. He bought his grandmother in Dublin a TV and an armchair and bought himself a car for £600 and then took the whole family of eight, including his grandmother, for a six-week holiday in Ireland with the rest of the money. I couldn't get rid of it quick enough, was the way that Joe Kinnear reflected on that. I think if there's anything that speaks to different times, different priorities, then that is that. Joe Kinnear, a lot of friends in the game. He'll be sadly missed. Now, Chris, moments of the weekend. And like I always say, it's you to go first.
Well, there is football outside the Premier League, as we well know. The Championship, brilliant it is this season. But I'm just a moment of the weekend. Peterborough beating Wickham in the Football League Trophy final. Another trophy for a Ferguson.
Yeah.
Onto the mantelpiece. That'll be some mantelpiece the Fergusons would have as a family.
How many spells has Darren had at Peterborough now? I think off the top of my head, I think it might be four.
I think you're right. I was going to say three, but I think you might be right. Yeah, but you know, big achievement. I mean, really big achievement. He's done great things at Peterborough. I'm a big fan of the chairman there as well. So well done them.
What is it they say about never going back? Never going back. Certainly don't go back three times. But there you go. Well done, Dan Ferguson. Well done, Peterborough. I'm actually going to go outside the Premier League for one of mine. You know, I like to have a few. Ooh. One of mine. Coventry beat Leeds 2-1 in the.
That's a bad result.
Why? You don't do fancy football in the champ as well. Oh, Norwich.
Norwich City won and just opened that gap 7 points, and then Coventry have got it down to four. They've got a game in hand. Go on.
Yeah, Norwich beat Ipswich in the Old Farm Derby 1-0, didn't they? But Coventry beat Leeds 2-1. So that the picture at the top of the Championship has changed again. Leicester, who looked like they were falling off a cliff, have now climbed back up that cliff and are top of the league again. But the reason that I mention Coventry is that they've got an FA Cup semi-final coming up against Manchester United in a fortnight, and be under no illusions they can win that game. Right, unless there's any other business from you, Chris, I think that's us for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please remember to follow all your breaking sport at Mail Online. Remember to follow the Mail Sport account on Instagram and X and TikTok, where we now have more than a million followers. There's an awful lot of content on there. For those of you interested in the Champions League, tomorrow night, Mail Online will be running live blogs across the Manchester City game in Real Madrid and the Arsenal game at home to Munich. So make sure you're across that as well. Please remember to hit the subscribe button whether you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That's really important. Leave us some comments, leave us some reviews, let us know what you think. Hopefully Pep Guardiola will leave us a review after listening on the way to training today. You never know. We'll be back on Thursday for our It's All Kicking Off Premier League preview show, and we'll be back together again this time next week for the next episode of this one. I am Ian Lademan, the chap who desperately needs to get to his bed after travelling through the night to get from Scotland back home to Norfolk. It's Chris Sutton, and this has been It's All Kicking Off.
Mom Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.